Are you a Dragon Boat athlete? Have you ever thought about joining a team? Hornet Water Sports makes high-performance, lightweight, carbon-fiber Dragon Boat paddles. You can choose from one of their many graphic designs. Don't settle for just a boring black paddle. I love their design so much that I have four different paddles. They also have all of the Dragon Boat accessories that you need, paddle bags, tip covers, tape, and more. Visit their website at hornetwatersports.com and enter the code PINK at checkout to receive 10% off of your order. That's hornetwatersports.com and enter the code PINK. Thanks for listening in. On this episode, 15-year breast cancer survivor and singer-songwriter Faith Walker joined us on the podcast. Faith was diagnosed in 2004 at the age of 26. 3 years later, she was diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer. She uses her cancer journey and her music to inspire others, including one of her latest songs, Head in the Clouds. Take a listen in as Faith shares her story. Welcome to Behind the Pink Ribbon, where we share stories, information, and other content related to breast cancer. My name is Melissa Adams. I am a 12-year genetic breast cancer survivor. I've learned so much through my own journey with breast cancer. I have met some amazing people along the way, many that have become lifelong friends. I have experienced the emotional roller coaster of a breast cancer diagnosis, heartache, anger, frustration, loneliness, and even gratitude. Through this podcast, we will speak to breast cancer survivors, supporters, and healthcare professionals to gain insight and understanding behind the pink ribbon. I'm here today with Faith Walker. Faith is a breast cancer survivor. She was diagnosed at the age of 26 back in 2004. She is also a singer-songwriter. So, Faith, I am super excited to have you here to share your story today.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. Any opportunity to share my story and inspire others, I'm all for it.
Absolutely. And we appreciate people like you who are very willing to share their stories. So let's talk about your diagnosis. So I already kind of indicated that you were 26. It was in 2004. But talk to me a little bit about, how this all happened for you, because you certainly were not of an age where you should have been having mammograms. So, tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. My journey kind of started out with some milk discharge. I was, 26. I'd already had two young children, and I was like, okay, why is this happening? Why am I lactating? So that was my initial, symptom. And so I went to my family doctor, who ordered an ultrasound. So I had my breast ultrasound, and it was one of those situations where they were like, don't call us, we'll call you. They were getting annoyed because I was calling to follow up. And
as you should.
So
if they're not calling you.
I was expecting a call, but then I ended up calling them, and they're like, no, we'll call you if there's anything wrong. So never heard anything. And then about 3 months later, I found a lump.
Oh my gosh. So wait a minute.
In that breast.
3 months later? 3 months later, and they never called you to say,
they never called me,
things are okay, things are not okay.
Well, what happened was I went into the family doctor for the results of that breast ultrasound that they sent me for. So once I found the lump, they said, okay, we're going to send you for another breast ultrasound. I went in for the results, and he was like, well, yeah, you still have a lump. It's doubled in size. And I'm like, what do you mean still? I was never even told about one in the first place. So
oh my gosh.
That was kind of like my first experience with not being able to be 100% confident in my care.
And that's not the way you want to start anything off. I mean, that's
exactly,
that certainly does not give you the confidence to know that they are going to have your best interest at heart moving forward.
Exactly. So that was tough, but I kept being reassured by my doctor. Oh, you're so young. Like, there's no strong family history. I'm sure it's nothing. We're just going to send you to a specialist, send you to, I ended up having a lumpectomy. And
so did you, let me kind of go back just a tad bit.
Sure.
Did you not do a mammogram? They just sent you directly for an ultrasound?
At that point, no, they didn't send me for a mammogram.
Wow.
I didn't have mammograms till later, but I guess the breast ultrasound was their way of, seeing what was going on. So Okay. Then they sent me for a lumpectomy, and I had my lymph nodes removed, and it had already spread to my lymph nodes at
that
point. How
many lymph nodes were involved?
I think it was eight.
Okay.
I believe it was eight. Yeah. So
did they do a full axillary dissection, or?
At that point, they basically suggested, like, you need to have a mastectomy.
Okay.
So they said, well, we could go back in and do another lumpectomy, but, you know, this is what we recommend. So even when, you know, I got the results, I was pretty shocked because that doctor had really downplayed it as well. Like, oh, you're so young. We're sure it's nothing. But, you know, so I really was shocked. I actually went to my appointment. I didn't have childcare. So I had my one of my sons with me who has severe autism. So I'm like in the appointment trying to get him to sit down, and I'm finding out like you have cancer. So yeah. It was pretty crazy. I just remember like calling my mom and just like bawling, just crying, like I have cancer. Yeah. Like that was like, you know, the first hit. And, so that was really tough. And so the mastectomy was.
So did somebody come and pick you up? I'm sorry.
No.
I was just trying to think about this. So you drove yourself home too?
I did. I drove myself home, and I don't remember what happened after that. It's like kind of a blur. I know I called, you know, some close friends and family, but I had like a really hard time. You know, it takes some time to process. So.
Absolutely. I mean, I can't.
Yeah, then.
I can't imagine, I'm sorry, that you went to this appointment, found out that you had cancer, didn't have anybody with you, and then you were able to, you know, drive home and do it safely. I mean, I know like, that
yeah.
days that I was in for months after, you know, to get that, I can't imagine.
Yeah, it was definitely tough. I've always been pretty independent, so I guess I just kind of just put one foot in front of the other. And I think that's sometimes what got me through, just knowing, okay, this is what I have to do for my kids. And at that point I was like, okay, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm, you know, very high survival rate. Like, let's go, let's get this done kind of thing.
So you did do the lumpectomy and then
I did the lumpectomy. Okay. And then I had a mastectomy after that.
How long was that time in between the lumpectomy and the mastectomy?
Now we're going back 15 years, so I'm trying to remember exactly. I don't remember. I feel like it was maybe a couple of months.
Okay, so I mean, it wasn't very long.
Maybe a month.
Okay.
No, I don't think it was very long. They got me in pretty quickly, and so following that, I had chemo, radiation, all the forms of treatment that they normally recommend. I was on tamoxifen.
So did you do chemo after the mastectomy or both? Or like did that all happen before? Sometimes they do chemo before the surgeries and then sometimes they do it after.
I need to look at my medical records and it's all kind of a blur.
It is.
I'm trying to think back to that time if it was before or after. I think it was after, but I'm not 100% on that. It's so many things happened and, just like the day-to-day stuff and then looking at the big picture,
And two kids. And one, you said it has a high level of autism. So I'm sure that, you know, not everything is necessarily, you know, popping back up into your mind fresh, but
yeah, exactly. Okay. You just kind of keep moving. But,
yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I had every form of treatment. I thought, you know, okay, I did this. My battle with cancer is done.
I'm going to interrupt you again.
That wasn't the end of it.
Okay.
Sure.
I definitely want to talk about that, but I want to talk about, you did reconstruction after the mastectomy.
Yes, I did. I kind of skipped over that.
Okay. That's all right. No worries.
I had about six different procedures now, like at this point. I had never had surgery prior to this lumpectomy, mastectomy. So now I think I'm about 11 surgeries. But as far as the reconstruction, I think I had the latissimus flap.
Okay.
Where they take skin from your back and basically build a pocket and then put a tissue expander in and then permanent implants after that.
Okay. So you did you use the latissimus muscle from both sides?
No, because they only did the right side. Okay. Now, looking back, I'm like, I wonder why they never even suggested that I had both done, but I just kind of went with what I was told, like, this is what we recommend. Okay. That's what I'm going to do kind of thing.
Yeah. And I feel like that's most of us where we're just like, okay. I mean, you're just put into that mode of anything and everything I have to do right now. You tell me and I will do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we don't know, right? Like, it's not, for the most part, many of us have never been through that experience. So it's all very new. Right. And, you know, again, we have to just kind of put our trust in the doctors.
And just, just follow through with whatever they suggest and not even, really question it. So,
right.
So that's what I did.
And then you said, you kind of got through that and then you really thought that this was going to be done and over with, but that wasn't the end.
It never crossed my mind that it could possibly come back or be a chronic illness. Like, it never crossed my mind ever. It was about 3 years later and I was pregnant with my youngest son and I was getting this extreme back pain and kept going back and forth to the doctors, to the clinic, to, even to the merge a couple times. And they were just like, the baby's pressing on a sciatic nerve. They even sent me to like a specialty hospital and they were like, yeah, the baby's probably just pressing on a nerve, but they never really investigated further. Just kind of kept saying, we'll take this pain medication, rest. And that was basically their advice to me. So it started getting worse and worse. It was like debilitating to the point where like I couldn't even stand or walk sometimes. So this particular day, I was able to walk a little bit and I reached down for my son's bag and then my back just gave out and I just fell to the floor.
Oh my gosh.
Could not move.
Oh my gosh.
Could not move at all. And I called 911. Oh my gosh. Are you serious?
And pregnant on top of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I was like, this can't be real. Like, what's happening right now? So finally, when they took me to emerge that time, there was a doctor that was smart enough to say, let's give her an MRI. So I just remember like being in the room and there was a doctor covering for my doctor and she was someone that she was my obstetrician for a previous pregnancy, but I really did not vibe with her. So I ended up switching obstetrician. So it was like the most uncomfortable situation, but she came in and she was like very hard and, she didn't have the best bedside manner, but she came in there with like tears in her eyes. I'm like, oh my goodness, like what is going on? Like, can somebody just tell me what's happening? They're like, we're trying to wait for my doctor. And she had tears in her eyes and she's just told me, you fractured your spine. And I'm like, okay, what does that mean? And she's like, well, you had tumors in your spine. That's why it fractured so easily. And I was just like, I was in complete shock because even more shocked than the first diagnosis is I'm like, wait, I already paid my dues. Like, how is this back? And I was at that point about 24 weeks pregnant.
So did you immediately think when they said tumors that it was related back to the breast cancer or?
I think that's when it sunk in when they said that.
Okay.
And they basically explained that, because I had like the free and clear. So like a microscopic cell must have traveled through my body to my spine. And the hormones of pregnancy, I had very estrogen sensitive cancer, but that's another thing. Nobody really explained that to me. So I guess I was naive in a way. I didn't know that, okay, this could cause, if there is a cell, this could cause it to grow kind of
thing. Sure. I mean, yeah. Cause I mean, I think we don't necessarily, you did the tamoxifen. My guess is, the tamoxifen was probably, 5 years or whatever. And, if that made, well, you said it was 3 years later. So,
yeah. So I had expressed to my doctor, like, I want to have another baby, before I turn 30 and, be done with it kind of thing. And they said, well, yeah, do tamoxifen for 3 years. And then, you can come off of it. So they never cautioned me or anything like that. So I guess I was naive in a way and I just, ended up getting pregnant with my son. So I of course I'm never going to regret
absolutely
that path or anything like that, but it was definitely a crazy, crazy time because once I had, once I found out my spine was fractured, I was admitted to the hospital, and they had me on all these different medications that were giving me side effects from like being cross-eyed to like slightly hearing voices in the background. Like my mother was there and she wasn't there. Like really, really serious medications. I'm like, what is this doing to the baby? You know? So at that point in time, actually, you know, I definitely blame myself for this, but I was just trying to be independent, strong, tough. In the middle of the night, one night, I was supposed to call for help if I was going to the washroom, and I just decided to go independently on my own. I was like, oh, come on. I feel better. I can go to the washroom on my own. And I think my hand, I can't remember it clearly, but I think my hand kind of missed the railing, and I fell, and I felt like my body shattered into a million pieces.
Oh, my gosh.
Could not move. They had to get one of those cranes and lift me up and get me into the bed. And at that point, I fractured my spine again. So they were like, okay, we need to get this baby out. And at that point, I was 27 weeks.
Wow.
So it was pretty scary having like 9 doctors there, having a little 2.5-pound baby, you know, not knowing what to expect. So I had a C-section, and then the next day I had a 9-hour back surgery to fuse my spine with rods and screws.
Holy cow. So you just had a C-section and then immediately went into back surgery.
Yeah. Next day. So
yeah.
No in between time to process anything.
Yeah.
It was pretty crazy.
And I'm sure your baby was taken right out and put into probably the NICU.
And actually I saw him for a couple minutes, and then they took him to a hospital an hour and a half away.
Oh my gosh.
I wasn't even able to see him for a month. So it was really challenging. I remember the first time I got to go up there and visit him, my mom and my daughter, we went together and finally got to hold him for the first time. He was like a month old.
Aww.
So after that, they switched him to the hospital where I was, because I had to spend 3 months in the hospital going through radiation and learning to walk again. Like I have permanent damage because of where my spine was fractured, and because of the surgery, I can't lift my right foot, and I have nerve pain, like pins and needles and sharp pains in my feet 24/7. So it's been like 11 years of that.
Oh.
So that's been tough too, living with pain every day. It's definitely been a challenge. But, you know, I was lucky that my son had no health concerns. He just had to have like a minor hernia surgery, and that was it. So I was definitely
considered. Yeah. Like that's
27 week baby.
Yeah. I mean, that is tiny, and there's still so much development that has to take place, you know, for him to kind of come out, you know, pretty healthy and only have to have a hernia surgery is amazing, really.
Yeah, definitely a miracle baby.
For sure.
That's what I tell him. He doesn't like to hear it, but I still tell him, like, you're a miracle. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, yeah, and, you know, now he's 11 or so at this point.
Yeah, he just turned 11.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, I think there's kind of that silver lining on the other side of that, right, is now that you it certainly wasn't something that I'm sure you wanted to go through, but on the other side of that, you have an amazing, you know, little person that's now 11 and still your miracle baby.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I really try to be aware of how lucky I am to be here, because I hate hearing the statistics, like the average lifespan for someone, you know, that was diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, like I was, is 2 to 3 years.
Right.
So just the fact that I'm here 11 years later, it's like 1 in 5 make it past 5 years. You know, I always try to remember that, you know, I'm still here for a reason. I have a purpose. You know, I have lost friends along the way, and I've taken it really, really hard. As I'm sure you can imagine, like when you're going through it, and then there's other people in your life that are going through, you know, breast cancer as well, and trying to be there for each other. But, you know, other types of cancer as well, just a lot of stuff, it hits really close to home.
Right. Well, and the survivor's guilt is real, you know, like a lot of people think that it's, you know, that it can't be real, but it very much is.
Definitely.
You know, and you never ask to be a part of this, you know, sorority or fraternity or whatever it is that you want to call it, this group. But some of these people become lifelong friends, and in the process, we lose them. You know, sometimes that happens. And it's really hard to kind of conceptualize and understand, you know, why that person and why, like, why am I still
why
here with that person?
Why them and not me?
Yeah, it is very much real. And those are, I mean, those are things that, you know, even still, you know, 15 years out, 12 years out, I would say even, you know, 20 plus years out, that people still struggle with that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It's really hard, especially, you know, one friend that I had that passed, she had we had met through a kids group for kids affected by cancer. So our sons were the same age and went through the group. I think they were maybe 5, 6, 7, 8, like those, that age range. And so we really connected through that. And then we, you know, we bonded on other levels and we became like really close friends. And you know, for several years, but when she passed, like just the thought of her son just like broke me. Like you know, especially having a son the same age and, you know, of course you think, you know, why did it have to be you, you know, and also this fear that, you know, this could be what my family is going to go through soon.
Right.
It's scary. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, currently, you know, with being at this point, you know, 11 years out from that, you know, the metastatic diagnosis, I know that there's, for a period of time, they want you to take medication. So are you still on any medication at this point or just kind of being monitored? Okay.
I have been on every form of hormone therapy. And I've exhausted all options as far as that. The cancer spread to other spots in my spine, my scapula, as well as my lungs. And more recently, they found a spot on my liver that's 3.5 centimeters. So at that point, they wanted me to start oral chemo. So I literally started that last week.
Okay.
I've basically tried everything. And you know, I did have a really strong remission for about 8 years and then it started to spread again. So, I do, you know, a lot of natural things as well, you know, lifestyle changes, but, yeah, I've done hormone therapy and now I'm doing, oral chemo.
Okay. So how are you doing on the oral chemo at this point? I mean, I know it started just last week, but, are you experiencing any side effects from it?
Nothing too bad because I am used to living with, you know, quite a few pains and side effects on a daily basis. I think maybe a little bit more nausea, but other than that, there aren't a whole lot of severe side effects for this medication. So I'm definitely lucky in that way.
Good, good. And so I want to kind of revisit something that you had said, because as I mentioned in the introduction, you are a singer-songwriter, and you had said that, you know, you feel like you're still here for a reason. And I don't know if those two are connected, but I would love to hear a little bit about, you know, what it is that you're doing and share a little bit about that.
Sure. Definitely, there is a connection between my music and, you know, what I feel is my purpose. I've been a singer-songwriter since I was pretty young. I started recording in the studio as a teenager, about 14. And I always wrote just about, you know, the daily, you know, hanging out with my friends and love and relationships. And so after going through cancer twice, I really started to see that I had even more of a purpose because now I could write about that experience. So I definitely see that as part of my purpose. And I've my last project, the EP that I put out, has, I would say, 3 songs on it that really touch on, you know, going through a tough time and then coming through and trying to see, you know, the blessings in disguise. So those have been really important to me. My biggest, proudest accomplishment is that we shot a video with a very talented director for the title track on the EP, which is Head in the Clouds.
I love it.
Yeah. Did you see the video?
I did. Did I send it to you? Oh, I did. Good. No, you didn't send it to me, but I did a little bit of stalking.
Oh, you saw it. Okay,
and
good.
Your voice is amazing, and I love the video.
Thank you so much. I had like this vision in mind of what I wanted for it. And a lot of people ask me, you know, oh, did you like scout these people or where did you find these people? Because I have different people, as you know, in the video holding signs that say their greatest struggle. And then at the end, they're holding a sign that says the greatest blessing that came out of it. But those are actually all my friends and family members. I've got some tough people that have been through some really trying times. I have my son in it as well, just saying he was, just over a 2-pound baby. So, and I think it's important because, I'm fighting cancer every day of my life, but there are other people that are, you know, dealing with other situations that, are very tough as well. And so I just wanted it to be something that was going to, everybody could relate to. And so this was just kind of the vision that I brought to the director, and he just brought it to life. So I'm definitely so proud of that. If anyone's listening and they want to check out Head in the Clouds remix video on YouTube, I'm pretty proud of it. And I think that it's inspired a lot of people already. So,
and you should be very, very proud of it. And,
thank you.
You know, the thing that I love the most is that, you know, we all kind of go through this, all of our stories are different, which is kind of the reason that we do the podcast called Behind the Pink Ribbon, because nobody's story is the same. But, you know, we all kind of go through this journey and it leads us to something. And even though you were, you know, kind of doing this since the age of 14, it sounds like you just feel like it's a bigger purpose and it's a way for you, you know, using your music as a way to kind of help other people through the struggles that they're experiencing. Yeah. So I think it's always so cool when I'm able to hear, you know, different people, the way that they're using their experience to touch the lives of, you know, somebody else that might be going through it as well.
Exactly. It's just, I'm sure you kind of feel the same about your podcast because it's, you know, it's definitely going to help a lot of people.
I hope so.
Yeah, definitely.
For sure.
I think so, for sure.
Do you have a website or where can our listeners find you? Because I will say that you are absolutely worth listening to. Your voice is amazing. So I definitely want to be able direct people, and ways to find you. So
to hear it. Yeah. So you can look on YouTube as well as, my Instagram is probably my most active, social media. So I keep everything like up to date on that, from performances to, you know, interviews and anything that's new with me. And then also,
What your else. Instagram account is Faith Walker, correct?
It's Faith Walker Music.
Music, okay.
Faith Walker Music, yeah. Just basically, I have a Facebook page as well, if you want to check that out. And I would say that Instagram is definitely the best way to keep current with what I'm doing.
Awesome.
Oh, I know what I was going to say. Sorry.
No,
Spotify.
That's okay. Oh, Spotify. Okay.
I'm forgetting something. Spotify. If you just search Faith Walker, I've got my EP on there as well as some other songs that I've been featured on over the years. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to share your story. I know that it's going to inspire somebody else, and thank you for all that you're doing with your music to help others through their own journey. We appreciate having you on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I truly appreciate your time as well. And, you know, I think it's important once we go through something to share what we've been through. So other people going through it, you know, it might make it a little easier for them or they don't feel like they're alone. So I appreciate your time as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Behind the Pink Ribbon. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you or anyone you know would be interested in sharing your story, please send an email to podcast@behindthepinkribbon.com.
Thinking about advertising on this podcast? Our ads not only create awareness for your brand, but also contribute to the continued growth and support of this show. Email us today and be on our next episode. Email podcast@behindthepinkribbon.com for more information. You've been listening to Behind the Pink Ribbon, produced by American Creative Consulting, mixed and mastered at Riverview Podcasting Studios. For more information, please visit designbyacc.com.